This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the show. Legal Curve Hockey Show, of course. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsburg, David Manuk, Tim Dabinat, Michael Remus, and Jesse the intern. They got a full house here today, December 21st, 2013. The second last Saturday show of 2013. We're not on, just a listener's note, we're not on for Christmas on Christmas Day. Then obviously December 25th, this Wednesday, so we'll be taking that show off. But we will be back with you next week, December 28th, live from South Winnipeg, I guess it would be.
Yeah, year-end show.
Year-end show.
For last show, second last show before the Olympic team comes out.
Yes,
so we're
going to
pick our Olympic teams, right? Changed a little bit.
Yeah, mine's changed. I you know, I did it the other day. I put in my spreadsheet, but we'll save it for next week, because that'll take up more than a couple of minutes here. Before we start, we're going to talk about the Jets' defense. We're going to talk about the pairings. We're going to talk about, you know, who's sitting, who shouldn't be sitting. The segment's is sponsored by CGA Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest-growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association at cga-manitoba.org. Certified General Accountants. We see more than numbers. When you look at the Jets' defense, numbers play a factor. I don't think there's any question about that, but last night, you know, we had heard that Grant Kutsum was going to be a scratch because he wasn't feeling well and there's a flu. David had an update from practice that said, you know, maybe something else is going on there. To go over this top six yesterday were Stuart Trouba, Enstrom, Bogosian, Party Buffon. People love in this city, and I understand it, to talk about who's the sixth defenseman is. You know, should Party be in there? Should it be Ellerby? Should it be Kutsum? Kutsum has played obviously the most of those guys. What do you guys think? You know, if you're picking your top six, Ezzy, and everybody's healthy, who is your top six?
Well, there have been some injuries as of late, and now the Jets are starting to get healthier, and Paul Postma is out indefinitely, but Zach Bogosian is now back. He had the injury, and he missed some games here. And for me, I looked at the defense pairings, and I've said this all along. I think Zach Bogosian and Tobias Enstrom, when all things being equal and almost the entire lineup is healthy, that's for me, that's my top pairing.
And they played together last night.
And I've always felt that Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien, and Claude Noel obviously thinks the same way here. I'm just saying that I'm complimenting him, and I think that he should continue with this, even though he doesn't really listen to this show to get advice on how to run his hockey team. But what I'm saying here is I think Enstrom and Bogosian complement each other because guys are both really good skaters, and they both have offensive abilities, but Bogosian really is starting to take on more of a defensive role, and he brings a lot of good attributes to the table. And right now, I think there is somewhat of an issue with who does Buff pair up with, because Grant Kutsum and Buff have paired up, but they've had trouble against some of the more skilled, talented teams in the West, Richie. And I don't know if Grant Kutsum really is suited to that role. So for me, I think if we're talking about some of the bottom pairings, I think Keaton Ellerby's been a healthy scratch lately, but I think he's done actually a very good job. And
well,
for
hold
me,
on, let me ask you specifically, though, because I want to get to that. You like Bogosian and Enstrom.
Mm-hmm.
And Trouba and Stewart, well together?
Well, I think even though Trouba is still only in his first year, I think we got to start talking about him being a second-pairing defenseman. And is Mark Stewart a second pairing defenseman? I think for the most part, the last 3 years,
he isn't. We know that
Stewart is a third pairing defenseman,
yeah,
right?
Max.
So I think you've got you know,
but maybe you
is Trouba and Byfuglien the pairing that you want there? And I think
who's playing the left side?
Exactly, you got two right shooting defensemen, right? So that's to me a problem. To answer the question, you know, because I'm dodging it a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, you know, can you figure out a way to get Trouba and Byfuglien? Can you do that? Because as we know, they don't like to always match up a left shooting defenseman a left shooting defenseman with a right shooting defenseman for obvious reasons. But to me,
maybe how this team is constructed, though, Ezzy, that they have to play Bogosian, Byfuglien, and Trouba and rotate them and just play the three pairings.
Right, right. That's
and then there's, you can throw around the special teams time.
Yep, and it's been done before. And you know, I feel like right now I would have Ellerbe in over Klitsam. To me, when Ellerbe is on,
would you put him on Buff? That would be a pairing, because that's the thing, right? If you like the other two pairings, I know you mentioned Trouba, Stewart, you're not sure, but I don't mind the Enstrom, Bogosian, Stewart, Trouba. I don't mind those pairings, but then of course it leaves you with Bufflin and Blank,
right?
And yep. Bufflin and Party, I don't like. I mean, there's not enough foot speed there.
No, Adam Party, I think I got to give Adam Party credit though. Yesterday he did a good job, but Adam Party is a guy that right now is a seventh defenseman, and he's in the lineup right now. And I'm not taking anything away from him, because I think he does some good things, and he's a good shot blocker. He's a big guy. He's a physical guy, and he's done a nice job since coming over here, since signing the 1 year deal. So, but I do think that, you know, if you have the options, you're putting Ellerbe in there probably with Bufflin, and then Stewart and Trouba. I guess you have as your bottom pairing guys, but then you have Trouba playing more minutes than your normal pair. So right now, I mean, it's a good problem to have. With Bogosian out of the lineup, you have all sorts of problems. But when Bogosian's back now, I think you know that him and Enstrom are your top pair of defensemen, and Bufflin's going to play more minutes because he plays more on the power play, and sometimes he even matches up with Enstrom, even strength. But I think it's something that you know that on the Chicago Blackhawks, that's kind of the gold standard right now, right? You've got Seabrook and Keith. You've got Oduya and Jarmelson, and then you've got Letty and Brookbank, or Letty and Roosevelt, or right? So you've got you always have your pair. You always know the guys are suited for their roles, right? And I think the Jets right now have had this kind of rotating cast of guys, and
they don't have a four. That's what they don't have a four. Right. So you don't have a four, you have to mix it up, and that's the problem. I mean, at the end of the day, Trouba, Bogosian, Bufflin and Enstrom. I mean, ideally, you want to bring Trouba around slowly, fine. But if you have a four, meaning you're a number four defenseman, he's got to play his wrong side.
Hold on. What about this, Richie? What if Trouba just all of a sudden decides to play hockey left-handed now?
Yeah, I mean, you never know. He's been that good. What do you think, David?
You know what? It's hard to disagree with what you guys, as he's put out, because if you look at the Coach Noel's a little bit stuck because he doesn't have that guy who can fit exactly. So he's kind of shoehorning players like Klitsam and Ellerbe and Party, and for the most part these guys are fairly interchangeable. I mean, there's not, you might get a little more foot speed with Klitsam than you would over Party, but then you're going to lose a little bit of the defensive soundness that Party brings over Klitsam. And then Ellerbe is kind of a hodgepodge of the two. He's got a little bit more offense than Party, and you know what I mean, like it's kind of like you don't really have that easy fix. And then you look at kind of what Zach Redmond is doing in St. John's. He's having a pretty good... Yeah. No, but I'm just saying, like, but in terms of he has a little more offense than those guys. Well, I don't know, because I'm just looking at the... really, you're looking at who's going to fit that one spot.
That's what I'm going to ask you. That's the real question here. If all the guys are healthy for Vancouver tomorrow night, who do you put with Bufflin? I'm going to ask both of you. Klitsam? I'm saying if healthy. Klitsam, Party, or Ellerbe?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see, because we have Ellerbe, who's been a healthy scratch of late, and Klitsam, who's kind of got this personal illness that kept him out of last night's game. But I'm going
to
say Ellerbe.
As opposed to an impersonal illness.
Out of the three, I'll say Ellerbe. I mean, Dave says, that he's hodgepodge, but Ellerbe's a classic stay-at-home defenseman. He's a big guy, and I think he gets, he gets sometimes a little bit rushed with the puck and makes some mistakes, and that's probably partly why he's been a healthy scratch lately. But I think Ellerbe's a pretty responsible defenseman, and can jump into the rush a little bit. He's more mobile than Party.
Do you like Ellerbe?
So I'll take Ellerbe there.
You're saying all things being equal, like everybody's healthy, because I think Klitsam isn't healthy.
Things being equal. All right, let's not evade here.
Sorry, I'm trying to hedge my answer. I'm probably going to go with Ellerbe as well. I think that he's right. He's not flashy, but he's solid, and I think he brings it's a fairly consistent player. He has that ability to turn the puck up and place and have some offense to his game. So I would throw Ellerbe. I mean, you picked him up, use him.
Yep, it's good. It's a good point. I mean, now this is a good problem to have, because the Jets, unfortunately, right now don't have these options on forward when they're healthy, right? Like, you don't have Jim Slater or Matt Halaschuk. So what do you do? So Eric O'Dell is playing, but he's not playing that much. So you know that right now you don't have all of these luxuries on the fourth line, but on the bottom pairing, the Jets do have luxuries, so it's a good problem to have.
There's a guy who the Jets would, of course, like to take that spot on the left side on the top four eventually, and that's Josh Morrissey. And we're going to talk about the World Juniors when we come back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
three segments down in the second hour. One segment to go in the second hour. We have, of course, an hour and 15 minutes left in this show. It's gone by quickly, but I'm still going to enjoy the next hour 15. Richard Pollack, Ezra Ginsberg, David Manouk, LegalCurve.com. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Tim Debenham producing, Michael Remus producing, and currently taking some photos from creative spots in the studio. I have to give Remus full credit. He's been on his game today early for the pre-show meeting. Focused for the whole show. You know, sometimes we give him a hard time, but let's give him his due when necessary.
It's because we went out for pancakes for breakfast, though. That's why Remus was there early.
Everybody had pancakes, all four of us.
Yeah.
This is true, and he was there early, so that doesn't usually happen. Usually, you know, people who listen to the show know that doesn't usually happen, so give him full credit to our friend Michael Remus. I want to talk about the World Juniors, but before we do that, the segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Of course, Chris Kattan coming into town, and I'm surprised we're not doing like the dance, him and the Will Ferrell dance, you know, at the side and throwing their heads. What's the song again for that?
Where do they
what
go?
What is love? That's right.
Oh, what is it, love?
I can't focus while Remus is taking pictures of Dave and Ezzy, and they're taking pictures of him taking pictures of them. While how do you host with all this stuff going on in the background?
Let's get Chris Kattan on the show.
Should we call Chris?
Let's get him on.
Will Ferrell was just in town, so we should get Will Ferrell in town. But World Juniors, guys, a couple angles. I'm still trying to figure out, and I was asking you guys during the break, why they fly these guys out there and then cut them in Sweden. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. But in any event, the pressure on Team Canada, year in, year out, is always top-notch. This tournament is in Sweden. Time changed. It's become a tradition on TSN, of course, starting on Boxing Day. Everybody knows that. What are your guys' expectations for this team this year?
I'll start off here. And to me, how can it not be gold every time? I mean, the Canadians haven't won gold since 2009, and the U.S. won last year. We all remember Jacob Trouba. And is there more pressure? I think there is. And you're going over to Sweden, and the Swedes have an excellent team. And the Swedes actually beat the U.S. in the pre-competition game, so it doesn't mean anything. But these are, indicators of things to come. And the Swedes are heavily favored. When you're the home team, you're always going to be favored, in any tournament, really. So
right.
For me,
especially
exactly. And, you know, if the Zamboni's working, you know, maybe we'll be okay.
Zamboni wasn't working for the preseason game against Finland.
Yeah.
And then destroyed the ice.
Yeah. Yes. And so, I mean, you have a team here. And if you watched the game yesterday after it obviously got underway here, you're talking about a team that's got a lot of talent. So, Connor McDavid, Sam Reinhart, mm-hmm. 16-year-olds, and you're talking Aaron Ekblad was very good yesterday.
Aaron Ekblad is supposed to be a stud. Aaron Ekblad and Sam Reinhart are projected to be the top two picks in the draft this upcoming year in Philadelphia.
And you're talking Nick Pétain right now is penciled in on the top line. And
you've got
Bo Horvat there who was traded, a highly regarded Vancouver Canucks draft pick. So you've got a lot of talent on this Canadian team. And, we should mention, too, that you only have one NHL-ready defenseman right now, but you've got Matthew Dumba right now, who is the captain of this team.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the captain. I don't know if they gave it to him. But
no, they gave it
to
Scott Laughton.
Oh, that's right. Laughton. Dumba's got
he's a Philadelphia draft pick. And as we know, Philadelphia, you can criticize a lot of things that they do, you know, moves.
That was a good draft pick. He played a little bit for them last year.
But they very rarely draft poorly.
Right, and so this is a tournament maybe that you'd say that Sweden's the favorite, and the U.S. is also one of the favorites because of the performance that they had last year, winning the gold. But to me, this is a team that has a lot of game breakers, and I think it's actually a benefit, guys, that they don't have these NHL players. I think everybody says, you know, why wasn't Sean Monahan released and why wasn't Morgan Riley released? Well, that just means there's an opportunity for another player. Matthew Dumba didn't make the team last year, and he wasn't really cracking the top six of the Minnesota Wild, but you still have an embarrassment of riches when you're the Canadian team.
You've got Derek. His skating ability, Eddie, but quickly, before you get to Derek Pouliot, his skating ability, Dumba's, on this big ice is going to be extremely important because he hasn't physically matured enough. In the NHL game, you see him get pushed off the puck, but he can skate. And that's going to be a huge asset in terms of his age as well to the ability of the Team Canada to take another step here.
Right. And for the Canadians, I don't think it can be overestimated, really, as far as the pressure that is on them always. But, you know, we haven't even talked about who's back and who really rarely loses at this tournament. It's Brent Sutter. And I think Brent Sutter is going to be a huge addition and a positive influence on this team. I think he knows this tournament. He knows the junior game. I think he's proven that as an NHL coach, he hasn't been as successful. And not to say that he hasn't had some success, but at the level he's had with the Red Deer Rebels, and at this tournament. So I think it's absolutely great, you know, that we're a couple of days away here. Well, maybe 5 days away from the start of this tournament. But, you know,
one more cut to come.
This team, and, you know, I know there's, again, pressure on the goaltenders, and there's not a first overall pick, but I think Zachary Fucali, you know, a Montreal draft pick last year, has proven himself to be a good goaltender.
He won the Mem Cup.
Right. So I think that's not an issue for me. And, you know, we haven't talked about it that much. Well, we talked about Patan a little bit, but again, Josh Morrissey, this could be a coming out party for him like it was for Trouba. Because
battling a little bit of injury, though, but they think, you know, well, it should be all right and good to go. But will he bet 100% is another question.
Right. And yeah, so Josh Morrissey, look out. It'll be fun for Jets fans to watch him.
At the end of the day, you look at their roster as in guys who aren't cracking in the top group right now, a guy like Anthony Mantha, who's a goal scorer. A natural goal scorer. So you have an embarrassment of riches similar to Team Canada on the Olympic level. The issue, my biggest issue with the tournament, and always has been, you guys know this, I said it before, is it's hard for us to say who the best team in the world is when Sean Monahan, Morgan Riley aren't playing. Like, you don't have the best under 20. You don't. Because not all of them are playing. So, you know, the year in the lockout when you had Team Canada absolutely jacked up, Crosby, Getzlaff, Perry, Phaneuf, Weber, the whole crew, especially that was also a tremendous class of players, but they dominated the tournament in Grand Forks like it was nothing. Now, I mean, they're not as dominant maybe the group as a whole, but the other issue also is that some of the best players, like Monahan, would be the number one center here. Morgan Riley would be the number one defenseman. And so they don't have those players. So it's hard for me to say, oh, you know, if they lose, do I get this discouraged? I don't really get that discouraged anymore. If they are eighth and they just don't perform at all, fine. But if Canada loses in the Olympics, I have a way harder time with it because I know the best players in the world are there. There's no questions about it.
And another player for Winnipeg Jets fans to look out for, if you haven't scanned the rosters yet, is Andrew Kopp, who's having a really good season with the University of Michigan on the American team. Yeah. So he's another guy to look out for. And, you know, it's a tournament that I always look forward to. And, you know, it's a couple of days away, as we mentioned, not a couple of days, it's coming up. So, you know, it's, you know, hopefully Canada can get back on that podium because, you know, in the late 2000s there, you know, we were in a position of five straight gold medals. And now you know, the expectations for Canada, you mentioned the Olympics, Rich, but whatever level it is, you know, the program of excellence, it's all about winning. So it's going to be a fun tournament, and I think there's less NHL players, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's always exciting. This tournament is always exciting. There's always storylines that develop, and you have a Russian team as well. Russia seems to be drafting less and less players into the NHL. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see guys that, you know, the angle that I would look at that is these guys might not be NHL players, but they're still highly skilled players that you might not see. This is the only time you see these guys. How often do you see Russian junior players, right? So, and Russia's always a factor, and they're always going to be a tough team to beat. And so, again, I think Canada's not a lock, but I still think they always have to be the favorite.
The big ice, though, is always an issue. I mean, to me, it's an issue, and that needs to be a big thing. Jonathan Drouin, I expect to dominate. You know, if fully healthy and Roland is probably the most talented player in the tournament, could be in the NHL. Obviously, he got sent back to the queue and had that concussion issue, but has been dominant when playing in the queue and settled in, and people were a little panicked about maybe not being in great shape in the Tampa Bay camp, but he'll be fine. There's a ton of talent on this squad. We mentioned Lawton. He is the captain of the team. Drouin and Dumba are the alternate captains, as he said, just so people know.
Yep.
People get, of course, more acquainted with the tournament when it comes up to December 26th, but Brent Sutter is a guy who's not going to let his, you know, foot off the pedal. And I think that's the biggest thing, you know, before we go to break, is Brent Sutter's experience. A lot of times Team Canada will throw some new coaches into the fire. And you might think you have pressure in your CHL town, and you do. But there's no pressure like pressure for Team Canada. And Brent Sutter, having done it in Vancouver and done it in Grand Forks, done it in the National Hockey League, played in Canada Cups. I mean, what hasn't Brent Sutter done? He's won the Stanley Cup with the Islanders. He's won World Juniors. He's done it all. And so, and Brent Sutter, people remember, was talked about for a Team Canada 2010 coach. It was basically many thought between him and Mike Babcock. Obviously, Babcock did a great job and will be the coach again in February here. But Brent Sutter can coach. And so I think his stability and his power and his calmness, yet calmness but still extremely intense and aggressive, will propel Team Canada to, I think, greater heights than they had been in past years. When we come back, we're going to bring on Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. And, you know, we've talked about them on the Wednesday show before, NHL Midweek. People thought maybe the Ducks, including myself, would take a step back. We're going to ask Dan about that. They haven't done that. Getzlaff and Perry have been incredible to watch. If you get any chance to watch this squad, they've surprised a lot of people. They have goaltending depth, and they have an underrated defense core. What is... how good are the Anaheim Ducks? And are Getzlaff and Perry going to make the Olympic team? We're going to ask Dan Wood those questions and more after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I'll tell you one thing. I know who's in charge of the music now. David Manuk, of course, joins me in studio. Richard Pollock behind the mic here. Ezra Ginsberg, Tim Debenham producing, and Michael Remus, of course, producing as well. Jesse, the intern. We're doing some yeoman's work behind the scenes here. And Dave, you know, we had Mike Colligan on the second hour, to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins and the injuries on the back end. You have an update from today's game in Pittsburgh, Calgary at Pittsburgh.
I don't know if we jinxed them, but Olli Maatta did not record a shift in the final 6:11 of the second period. And so there's been no word of his status. But it appears that the defense of Pittsburgh is taking a further beating. And then of note is that Sidney Crosby has now officially broken into the top 200 scorers of all time. Ties Dave Gagne, Olli Jokinen, and Alexei Zamlov on 198th on the list with 719 points.
That's, you know, what do you say about Sidney Crosby, right? I mean, he's just that good. And I, when you think about Crosby and Kunitz, you think about a combination that works. And people keep talking about how Sidney Crosby is not as easy to play with as people once thought, and maybe that is the case. And you watch him, and you know him and Ginla, they talked about in the Olympics. If there is a player that is a kind of a security blanket for Sidney Crosby, it brings us back to what we had that discussion with Ray Ferraro of TSN, a few weeks ago. Do you pick guys who are combinations, or do you pick the best players available? Because sometimes the best players put together don't always end up being as good as you might think.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
I think on that point is the Anaheim Ducks, and we have Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network, one of our favorite guests, joining us right now. And Dan, thanks for joining us. It's always appreciated. You're on the road right now on the East Coast, so thanks for giving of your time. And the Anaheim Ducks, Dan, are a team that, I mean, at least from my perspective, I thought maybe may take a step back and maybe exceeded expectations with their performance last year. That has certainly not been the case. What's been the key to them continuing to be a top team in the National Hockey League this year?
In a word, depth. They have encountered more injuries than you can possibly imagine. They've played more road games than any team in the NHL, and they would not have been able to survive either of those without far better depth than I think anyone had given them credit for. You don't have to look any farther than the past couple of games. Finally, the big line cooled off. Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry, and Dustin Penner have not been carrying the team the past couple games. And last night, a perfect example in New Jersey, they get big contributions from Kyle Palmieri, Matthew Perreault, Teemu Selanne with a couple of assists, Cam Fowler with a big goal. And it just seems like whatever this team needs, it finds a way to get it and win hockey games.
Dan, last week I picked the Dustin Penner, Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry line is the top line in hockey. Now, as far as you're concerned, why has Dustin Penner excelled on the top line so much with Getzlaff and Perry?
Well, the funny thing about it is Dustin Penner has hit a little bit of a dry spell here lately and hasn't been putting up the points that he was earlier. But if you look at the big picture, I think a couple of things. Number one, there's obviously familiarity between those three guys from when they played together earlier in their careers and helped the Ducks win a Stanley Cup in 2007. They're all three good friends, and they're bonded on and off the ice. And then if you look at the kind of player Penner is, he really complements Perry and Getzlaff well. You know, they like to cycle the puck down low, protect it with their big bodies, open space, and, you know, make plays. And Penner is really good at all of those things, much better than people give him credit for. And he also has good hands. You know, he can bury the chances when he gets them. So you look at what Getzlaff and Perry have accomplished. They're great players on their own, or, you know, with revolving line mates, which they've had pretty much since Penner left Anaheim. Mm-hmm. But with Penner, you know, they've been even better. They've taken their game to another level, and I think all three of them deserve credit for that.
Dan, sticking with Ryan Getzlaff, he's been absolutely dominant this season, and he's been shooting a lot more. Do you think he is a lock for the Canadian Olympic team?
I can't imagine that he isn't, and I would not have said that prior to the season beginning. I thought he and Corey Perry were both on the bubble because, you know, even though they were on the team 4 years ago, I thought, you know, there was a possibility that they might not make it this year. But given how they've performed this season and the fact that they are incumbents, so to speak, I would be absolutely floored if Team Canada didn't select both of them.
You know, on that point, Dan, you know, you watch this team, and they're just that line, particularly the Getzlaff Perry line, and you talked about the depth, and we're going to get into the depth within this interview, but their ability to control the puck down low and just more and seems more engaged. Like, I feel like, you know, 4 years ago they had taken that total next step and they established themselves. Maybe 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, they kind of seemed like they had plateaued a bit. Is there a reason you think for them maybe taking another step forward again?
Well, in addition to, you know, having Penner on their left wing, I think, you know, it goes back to your question about the Canadian Olympic team. Certainly that is a motivating factor for Getzlaff and Perry. They both desperately want to be on that team. And, you know, we can't lose sight of that. If you look at the way those guys play, I think the single biggest difference is a huge one, and it's the fact that Ryan Getzlaff has been shooting the puck this season when he should shoot the puck. Mm-hmm. In years past, there were countless occasions when everyone in the arena would be yelling at him to shoot the puck, and instead he would try to dish it. And this year, I don't know if that's happened at all. And if it has, not more than two or three times. I mean, when he has been in a position where the shot was the right play, that's what he's done. And Ryan Getzlaff has a tremendous shot. You look at his numbers, and he has 16 goals. He's on pace to smash his previous season high of 25. And, you know, it's like any other sport. It's like basketball. If you keep the defense honest with your ability to either shoot or pass, you're going to make yourself and your teammates that much more dangerous. That's what Getzlaff has done.
And you know, on that point, again, I want to beat a dead horse with Getzlaff here, Dan, but, you know, listening to Bruce Boudreau talk in terms of the leadership ability, and I was watching the Ducks game, this was about a week and a half ago, and Getzlaff has a terrible turnover in his own zone, leads to a goal, literally wills himself to score about three shifts later, and it seems like he's just kind of taken over as the identity of that team.
Bruce Boudreau called Ryan Getzlaff not long ago maybe the best leader that he's ever seen. And I think that's a good point that you bring up because, you know, I think Ryan Getzlaff has had to grow into that role. And he certainly had a good mentor in Scott Niedermeyer. And, you know, Ryan Getzlaff has said on occasion that he still talked to Scotty, you know, even when Niedermeyer wasn't around the team. Now, as an assistant coach, Niedermeyer is right there, although he doesn't travel on all the road trips, but still, he's very accessible. And, you know, who better to go to for advice, or who better to follow his example than Scott Niedermeyer? And I think, you know, Getzlaff has really, really grown as a leader and as a captain, and I think that probably has an awful lot to do with the Ducks' success as well.
We're joined by Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network in his fifth season as a color analyst on the Ducks Radio, and he, of course, covered the team for many years on the Orange County Register as the team's beat writer, and before that, the San Jose Sharks, so years of experience. Dan, one player who, coming into the season, you know, people maybe weren't sure what he was going to be is Nick Bonino, and he comes in, he's really kind of been very successful with in terms of flexibility. You know, he can play second line, he can play fourth line, he can play power play. He's produced offensively, and then in late November, he signs a 3-year deal, 3-year contract extension, which kicks in next year, $1.9 million a year. Pretty reasonable. How underrated is he?
You know, that's another really good point. Probably if you were to canvas hockey fans across North America, not a lot of them would have any idea how valuable Nick Bonino is. But the versatility that you mentioned certainly is big. And the other thing about Nick Bonino, he just has a knack for coming through with big plays. You know, he's done it his whole life. He did it as a collegian at Boston University, helped BU win a national championship. He comes up with not only big goals, but, I mean, puck retrievals on the power play. That's probably his greatest strength as a power play guy. You're not going to score goals on the power play unless you keep the puck in the offensive zone. Bonino is really good at doing that. And so he's one of those guys that is probably never going to get a whole lot of headlines, but he's the type of player that you have to have to win in the NHL.
Dan, I apologize if you think you were going to get through this interview without a Teemu Selänne question, but unfortunately, it's the middle or so of the interview here, so I got to ask you a question about Teemu Selänne, because that's all you know, Winnipeg hockey fans care about as far as you know, hockey goes. Teemu Selänne, and you know, he's picked up his play as of late, but you know, he's only got 11 points this year. We know it's his last season. Bruce Boudreau is still monitoring his minutes closely. How do you think Teemu Selänne has done stamina-wise at this point in his career?
Well, I think they've made some wise choices. You know, they said coming into the season that he would not play in back-to-back games. He did one time when the injuries were just such that they really had no other choice, but otherwise he hasn't. I don't expect him to play tonight against the Islanders, so I really don't think the stamina has been an issue. It's been a tough start for Teemu. There's no question about that. But as you mentioned, you know, he has put up some points lately. He's got a goal and 4 points in the past three games. And maybe most important, Teemu says he still feels good. And, you know, he attributes it to just kind of bad luck. And obviously when a player gets older, everyone wants to attribute it to more than that. But Teemu does not lack for confidence. You know, he believes that he's going to have a real strong second half. And I think with the depth that we've talked about, you know, Teemu doesn't have to carry the team like he did in years past. But if he can have games like he did last night where he wins a faceoff that leads to a goal and then he has another assist later, you know, that's what the Ducks need from him at this stage of his career. And I think Teemu can still deliver that.
Dan, Saku Koivu seems to move seamlessly into being a two-way solid center, but he doesn't get a lot of press. Why is that?
Well, you know, he doesn't command attention, that's for sure. When Saku came to Anaheim, I think we all thought, because he had been the captain of the Canadiens, that he would be a guy who would constantly be talking in the locker room and, you know, quoted in the newspaper and so on and so forth. And maybe because he had to go through that so much in Montreal, maybe by the time he got to Anaheim, he just kind of wanted to avoid it. You know, he still is helpful when you get him, but he won't go out of his way to get media attention. And I think as a result of that, you know, people have a tendency to overlook him. But we talked about Nick Bonino being the type of player that you have to win. You know, the Ducks proved in 2007 that a good third line can do wonders for a team. And, you know, with Koivu, Dan Winnick, and Andrew Cogliano, whose play this season has just been unbelievable, it's a pretty good third line.
It's a really good third line. It's very effective. And we have Dan Wood, radio color analyst for the Ducks, joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday afternoon in Winnipeg. The Ducks, if people don't know, some people don't, 55 points, 1 point back of the Chicago Blackhawks, and they've played one less game. So the Ducks are second overall in the National Hockey League. And Dan, going into the season, some people, again, including myself, had some concerns about the back end. Watching this team play, you know, quite extensively, the maturation of Cam Fowler has really been something that I've noticed. He seems engaged physically. I mean, we always knew he could skate and move the puck, but he seems to kind of be turning into an all-around defenseman at a very young age.
He really does, and, you know, believe me, you were not the only one with a concern about the Ducks' back end going into the season. it was perhaps bordering on panic after opening night when they just got absolutely blown out in Colorado. And, the defense was not good. Francois Beauchemin, who was coming off off-season knee surgery, he had a bad night in the opener. And, Sheldon Surrey was hurt. Lucas Pisa was hurt. Tony Ludman had retired. And there was big-time concern. But everything seems to have fallen in place. And Cam Fowler is at the forefront of that. He really has matured. And he said in training camp, he gave a quote to Eric Stevens of the Orange County Register where Cam said that he knew he had been coddled in his first three seasons in the NHL, and he knew that it was time for him to step up. And at the time, I was really glad to hear Cam say that. I just hoped that he could live up to the accountability that he was taking. And he's done exactly that. I mean, he has been tremendous. He leads the team in block shots. He leads the team in ice time. He's still the best offensive defenseman. He plays along with Ben Lovejoy against other teams' top lines. He's a plus player for the first time in his career. And, again, I go back to Scott Niedermeyer. He's a pretty good mentor for Cam Fowler, mm-hmm. too. And, I'm not suggesting Cam Fowler is going to become the second Scott Niedermeyer, but he plays a similar game. And, his evolution into a real strong two-way defenseman has been huge for the Ducks.
Dan, another guy that we talked about on the NHL Midweek Show, which we do on Wednesdays, who you just mentioned, is Ben Lovejoy. And he was a guy that was having difficulties cracking the Pittsburgh top six and was in and out of the lineup. And he's really, as you mentioned, found a nice little spot there with Cam Fowler. How have his skating and puck-moving ability really contributed to the transition game for the Ducks?
Well, it's helped a lot. And on top of that, he's a right-hand shot, which you don't find a lot of on defense, and certainly the Ducks haven't had many of those over the years. So, Ben and Cam Fowler have clicked really well together. And, why that is, why some players work well together and others don't, I think is a mystery to all of us at times. But Ben is a guy who, he's very intelligent. He's very articulate. He cares and he works really hard to maximize his abilities. And you're right. I think in Pittsburgh, they had a lot of depth. The Penguins did. And Ben was in a situation where if he made a mistake, he might not see the ice again for who knows how many games. And here, the Ducks have kind of, maybe been forced into relying on him. But Ben Lovejoy has lived up to that and become a really solid player for the Ducks. So, I think it's a case of a guy needing an opportunity and, gets traded and takes advantage of it.
Dan, Hampus Lindholm is an impressive rookie, and he has about plus 20 plus minus. Can you tell people about his game?
Hampus is another guy who has a chance to have just a tremendous career. I always try to be cautious with young defensemen because like Cam Fowler, who had a great rookie year and then kind of leveled off a bit the next couple years, you don't want to expect too much from Hampus Lindholm in the immediate future, but his skating ability, his offensive ability, he's strong defensively, and most impressive about Hampus Lindholm is his poise. He never seems to get rattled, and when he makes a mistake, more often than not, he's able to recover from it and, create a situation where it doesn't lead to a problem. So, Hampus right now might be hitting a little bit of a wall just because he's played every game since being scratched in the opening two games. And, we tend to forget guys coming over from Europe haven't played that kind of schedule. And Hampus didn't last year in the American League either because he was hurt much of the year. So it's a grind, these 82 games. We already mentioned how many road games the Ducks have played, and they've played close to as many games as any team in the league. So it wouldn't surprise me if Hampus were to get a blow here in the near future, but this is a kid with just a tremendous upside.
Final question, Dan. Look at the goaltending, and obviously the depth that they have in the system is, very, very exciting, I think, for Ducks fans as a whole. But early in, middle of the season or early part of the season, you heard Nashville was calling on Jonas Hiller, and, the Ducks weren't sure what was going to happen. Of course, he's a pending unrestricted free agent for listeners who aren't aware of that. He's been playing really well lately. Of course, they keep winning, and he's been in the net for the past many victories. What happens there? Does this team kind of ride him out and see what happens in the summer just because they have the depth moving forward? Or, I mean, are they going to possibly ever entertain moving him before the end of the season, considering how well they've been playing?
Well, I think they would entertain it if someone were to make them an offer that they couldn't refuse, but that typically doesn't happen where goaltenders are concerned. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in order to get Jonas Hiller, a team would have to give the Ducks considerably more than any team would. And, you know, we talked about the Ducks' place in the standings, and certainly they figure to be a contender come playoff time. And as good as Frederik Andersen has been, as good as John Gibson appears to be in the American League, I don't think the ideal scenario is to go into the playoffs with two untested goaltenders. Now, let's not forget about Victor Faust, mm-hmm. who was real good for the Ducks last year, but has had a hard time staying healthy this season. So I don't know how the Ducks could possibly move Jonas Hiller this season. I think you have to stick with him as your number one, which is what they've done. Go into the playoffs, see what happens, and then you're going to have to make a decision at that point. You know, do you want to pony up the money to sign Jonas Hiller again, or do you not? People sometimes think it's the worst thing in the world when an unrestricted free agent walks away. But let's not forget, if it were to work out that way, the Ducks suddenly have quite a bit of money that is no longer invested in Jonas Hiller that they can spend somewhere else. So, you know, it's not a bad scenario to just let it play out.
Yeah, probably a good problem to have. Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network, radio color analyst, thanks so much for giving of your time while you're traveling over on the East Coast. And Merry Christmas and happy holidays, and hopefully speak to you soon.
Same to you guys, and thanks very much for having me.
Always a pleasure, Dan. When we come back, we're going to talk about Anaheim Ducks in L.A. for the, not Winter Classic, but the outdoor game, one of six this year.
Where are they playing, like Rodeo Drive? Like, where are they doing that game?
Yeah, they're actually playing on the ocean. They're going to be playing in Dodger Stadium, and it's going to be an interesting game. But the ticket prices for all of those games have kind of dropped a bit.
Hold on, when do prices ever drop in L.A.? Always go up?
That's what we're going to talk about. You're going to be the Alan Greenspan here of the Legal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Thank you very much to Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. People don't realize Ducks one game at one point out of the best record in the league, and they beat Chicago in Chicago not so recently. I'm joined by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manouk, I'm Richard Pollock. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 this Saturday afternoon. Tim Debenham with the great tunes today and producing our show, along with Michael Remus and Jesse, the intern, putting some great work into an interview we did on Wednesday evening. If you haven't heard it, you can access it on iTunes and on theillegalcurve.com. Is an interview we conducted with the producer of 24/7. Of course, the HBO series that has been getting a ton of attention, the Toronto Maple Leafs and Detroit Red Wings. We asked that producer, Dave Harmon, how they come to the decisions they do in terms of content, in terms of hours of filming, what is allowed, what's not allowed. So Jesse's going to have a post up on illegalcurve.com, and we'll be tweeting it out on our Twitter page there, so you can take a look and listen to it and or read it, if you so choose. Before we talk about these outdoor games, and there are about 64 of them, this segment's brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus in the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper-fitting, custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus in the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. I have to make sure I don't read www like our friend Drew. No, that's very dated.
Very antiquated.
Very antiquated. It's a better word. Guys, I'm reading online at a good site called Cuckoo's Corner. They have a good place to go read all the articles online in terms of, you know, what's going on in the National Hockey League. And one article that I came about was an article from Ticket IQ, it's called. And what they do is they have all the information pertaining to ticket sales and what the price of tickets are. And the outdoor games, they break down all the outdoor games and how tickets are, you know, how the tickets are selling thus far. Winter Classic tickets, of course, that's the January 1st game, 24/7 leads into that game, started at a high price when the game was first announced, I'm quoting here, but have been dropping as the games draw closer. On October 28th, the average price for a ticket on the secondary market, so resale, was $437. That price dropped to $363 per ticket a month later, and now, almost a month later again, is $220. In less than 2 months, prices for the Winter Classic have dropped almost 50%. The $91 get-in price is also cheaper than every other Stadium Series game this season. Concern? I mean,
this is a good thing.
I can speak personally. I haven't offered tickets to this game. But that's a far distance to go to sit outside.
Oh, offer tickets. Look at you, Mr.
We'll have to pay for them. And they're a fortune.
Well, still, no, yeah. I know. Well, people are always offering you everything, Richie. But you're like, what does that mean?
I'm not going to comment on that one.
This is a good thing, is it not? Fans get to go to the game for cheaper? I mean, the thing is, Richie,
this is a true way to look at it. I agree with you there. The tickets are exorbitantly expensive.
Right.
The concern I have is...
Or are they not going to pack it? They want to pack it. That's the thing.
It'll lower the prices to pack it. But the point is, we don't have one this year. We have six.
Right. And I think you want to get into the other games, too, and the fact that ticket prices have dropped in L.A. and in New York as well. Right? A rare thing for things to be cheaper in New York.
Yes.
But it's a good thing in the sense that the television contract is already there. The television deal behind these games are there, and they will draw huge audiences. So I think it's still a moneymaker. But I guess the concern would be on from the NHL's perspective and in these respective markets. But as far I'm looking at it from the perspective of the hockey fan who can go now for half of the price. So,
but I mean, look, Remus makes a good point from the other room. He says, you know, either they're priced too high or maybe there's too many games and people just don't care.
Well, I think part of it is that the market is saturated, right? So there's just there's too many of these outdoor games. You know, obviously there's one Winter Classic, but there's five other outdoor games this season, and it's too many, right? So, but specifically, if you look at the people who are in Michigan or in Southern Ontario who are going to go to that game, you know, that doesn't change. Those people are still going to want to go and fill up that stadium regardless of whether there's 100, you know, outdoor games or one. So the people that it's going to draw from that surrounding area are still going to choose whether to go, and that's based on the ticket price.
Well, let me get in on that. We just talked to Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks. Anaheim Ducks, Kings, January 25th, Dodger Stadium. Those tickets have dropped by 11% almost, but it does have a high get-in price, meaning the minimum price is $141. The Yankee Stadium games are playing during the week of the Super Bowl, January 26th and 29th. Rangers Devils and Rangers Islanders. The Rangers Devils games have dropped. The ticket prices have dropped 9%, and the ticket prices for the Rangers Islanders have dropped 18%. I mean, guys, every ticket's dropping. David, to continue your point.
Well, I just look at it and I think to myself, like, I mean, personally, I'm not sure why the Rangers need to play two games a season at Yankee Stadium. I mean, it completely.
They're trying to capitalize on that Super Bowl crowd, I guess.
I guess so, and also the fact that it's a tri-state, you know, the whole tri-state area, and you got like that. I mean, that's a massive population to draw from. So it's not like you're going to have to worry about a lack of population base with which to supply, you know, fans for the games. But I just look at that and I think to myself, like, playing somewhere else. I mean, play in Minnesota. Play, you know, and I understand Minnesota won a Winter Classic as opposed to maybe one of these outdoor games. But, like, you know, it's lost something for me.
And you look at the Blackhawks Penguins, guys. Ticket prices for this game are actually insane. The prices for the game, first off, have fallen 24%, or almost 24%, since the end of October, as per this article in Ticket IQ. The current average price for this game is $364. I mean, come on. I mean, they say that the get-in price is the cheapest of all of them at $85, but how much are the close tickets? And by the way, you're not that close.
Yeah. And as far as Jets fans are concerned, we know that there's going to be an outdoor game in 2016, so skipping ahead to that last game at BC Place, you're looking at $318. For an average ticket, right?
Right, so down 11%.
These tickets are not expensive, and, you know, I am not in the sports business world. So as far as what the price is determined, I have no idea how they determine that. I know that it's maybe an extension to a certain degree of what is offered for season ticket prices. But yeah, it's possible that, you know, based on this article and the fact that all six Stadium Series games have seen ticket reductions, maybe originally it was priced a little bit high, because the ultimate goal is not to fill up half of the building. They want all of these stadiums to be full. And I'm not sure what the Michigan Stadium is at right now, but I thought that they were expecting 110,000 plus.
And the biggest issue you have, I think, at the end of the day in terms of PR, is if you have people paying $400 a ticket and then somebody beside them gets it comped or gets it for $200 or $150 because they're not selling enough, and they have to give away free tickets to be able to compensate for that.
That's also the price of doing business, though. I mean, sometimes you jump in early, and for those who wait, they get the benefit of paying less.
I don't know who's pricing these. If it's obviously the NHL, probably in conjunction with these teams, but it appears to be that they've certainly outpriced the common fan, but even outpriced their ability, the supply and demand
right
isn't meeting up here.
And the market will dictate for the up until these games what the value will be on those remaining tickets.
It'll be interesting to see. When we come back, Stanley Cup odds. You know, we're almost 40 games through the season, almost halfway through. Who are the favorites to win the cup? What about favorites to win the division? We're going to break that down next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Second last segment, the Saturday afternoon show. You're listening to TSN 1290, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Richard Pollack, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manouk of IllegalCurve.com. Boys, we talked about the past segment, we just talked about the outdoor games, but we're almost halfway through the season now, and looking at the Stanley Cup odds, more importantly, I mean, the division odds, you know, that'll change, but the Stanley Cup odds, and we're using kind of an amalgamation of all of the odds online on one site, Sportsbook Review has that, and we're using those odds. This current Stanley Cup favorite is Chicago Blackhawks, 13-2, and the Pittsburgh Penguins are actually also at 13-2, although I think the Blackhawks are the superior team. But let me read you some other odds. I want to hear what your perspective is on this. Third team is Bruins at 8-1, Blues at 8-1, and then the Sharks at 9-1. Then you see a little bit of a jump where you have the Ducks and the Kings both at 12-1, the Canucks at 18-1, the Avalanche at 22-1, and the Red Wings at 25-1. A ton of Western Conference teams there, if you guys didn't realize. And obviously, you know, the odds of winning the East are going to be easier because of Boston, Pittsburgh, and then really nobody else. Are there any teams you see maybe are not being recognized as being as good as they actually are?
Yeah, I think there are, and there are a lot of good bets there, starting with a couple of the California teams. And I know the Chicago Blackhawks right now are pretty unbeatable, but you have teams right now that are playing really well, and it's because of the fact that the Chicago Blackhawks are playing so well, really, maybe that it's getting a little bit underrated. And, you know, I'm looking at some of these odds here, and if you are betting money, I guess, you know, you could look at a team. I would start off with the California teams. You look at San Jose, LA, and Anaheim, and those odds are really good, as you just mentioned. If you want to go with a wild card, even though I don't think Colorado is there at this point, I think they're a couple of years away. For me, Toronto's odds are still really high, and I know that Toronto has fallen down the standings now. They're in sixth or seventh there in the Eastern Conference, and Tampa Bay is still up there. You know, so there are some good odds there, and I think, you know, I picked the Pittsburgh Penguins to win the Cup before the season started, and they've got really good odds, and I still think that's a sure bet, and Chicago probably too as well. And Chicago hasn't lost a beat. We've seen them come into the MTS Center and really dominate the Winnipeg Jets. And I think the Winnipeg Jets, going forward, that's kind of the gold standard, and they're trying to compete with the Chicago Blackhawks. But you've got some interesting odds there, and it's a little bit top-heavy. The further you go down the list, you're starting to say, okay, there aren't too many, you know, picks towards the bottom of the standings, despite the odds being maybe pretty good to pick up some money, but I think you're looking at the middle. Once you get past, as soon as you get past Toronto and Detroit, I don't think they're legitimate contenders. I wouldn't bet the farm there.
I'm not a gambling expert by any means. I don't really know much tons about it. I'm just looking at these and to see, it's a good gauge to see what, you know, Vegas thinks about the teams that we're watching. But one thing to take into account is the new playoffs format, and is that certain teams have to go through certain teams to get where they are. Where Anaheim, LA, San Jose are top three. They're gonna have to go through each other to get to the conference final. And you look at Pittsburgh and Boston, and right now those two teams have to go through, you know, Tampa, Montreal, and for Boston, and Washington, Philly for Pittsburgh. I mean, how much of an easy road right now would that be, even with their wild cards and however that turns out? You look at Chicago, they have to go through St. Louis because they're 1-2 right now, and, you know, Colorado and whoever else transfers over. So, well, you might see some nice odds, and you mentioned, Ezzy, and I'm with you on that. L.A., especially L.A., they don't allow any goals, and I think they're a little more refreshed than they were last year, and Sutter has them going. But you have Anaheim, L.A., and San Jose. They're going to beat each other up to get out of that division, and not that Chicago and St. Louis won't either. But boy, it seems like the Eastern Conference value in terms of the lack of competition there may prove to be the biggest factor at the end of the season.
We've got six out of the best eight odds, right, are coming out of the Western Conference,
right.
And that's an accurate reflection of what's going on here. Pittsburgh and Boston are the two best teams in the East record-wise, and I think as far as chances go to win the Stanley Cup. So it's an interesting time. You know, we've talked about this a lot. How do you get a really good gauge of a team? At what point do you get a really good gauge of a team? And I think it is the Christmas time, midway point of the season.
Absolutely.
And I think that's obviously why you brought it up and you wanted to kind of go over some of these odds. And I think there are a few teams that you could say are on the fence. Are they real? Are the Minnesota Wild real? Not only are they going to make the playoffs, but if they match up against the Chicago Blackhawks, do the Wild actually have a chance against the Chicago Blackhawks? How many games can they win here? And, you know, there's obviously differences in betting if you're in Vegas and, you know, are you going to put down, you know, just a fun $10 bet and let
you're
it
going
ride?
To Vegas? We should, right. talk about it.
Yeah, that's a scary thought. But, you know, if you're putting...
Not for the casino owners, but for everybody else.
Right, and if you're putting down a little bit more money, you're probably going to think a little bit more about it. But it's also fun just to look at the stuff.
That's what it is, you know. Right. What is because Vegas takes so many factors into account. And what do they think? And you
right.
see, 8 of the first 11 teams on the list for favorites are Western Conference teams. I mean, and that's I think a reflection of the quality of these teams, David.
You know what? I think so. And I think the interesting thing for me is this also doesn't take into account moves that will be made later on, right?
Absolutely.
So that's, I mean, and again, like you said, I'll have to preface this by saying I'm not a gambling expert by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, if you could take a team right now that's on the outside looking in from these odds standpoint, and, you know, like, you never know what a GM might do if they think that their team is on the cusp of something, and that move could be sufficient. So if you take a risk, right? The team I looked at when you said which team is kind of off the board but could potentially be worthwhile is maybe Vancouver, because we know that their window is slowly closing. So I'm not suggesting that they're going to win the Stanley Cup by any stretch of imagination, but they've proven to be a little bit more cohesive this, you know, of late, and who knows what they could do potentially down the road. I'm not saying they're going to.
Yeah.
I'm just saying if I'm looking at the teams that are on the outside of that scale, I don't think that they can get through a Chicago or an LA or anything like that, but you never know what could happen.
And think about that division, okay? So they don't cross over, they end up finishing fourth. Right now they have to play Anaheim. If they were fortunate to beat Anaheim, who's a big, strong team, and they can skate too, then you have to play the winner of San Jose, LA. And if you can get through that, then you have to play the winner, likely, of Chicago, St. Louis.
Right.
And if you get through that, you probably have to play the winner of Pittsburgh, Boston. Good luck with all of that.
And let me tell you, you deserve the Stanley Cup if you can get through that.
And that's a factor, exactly. And you look at, let's just break it down from the other perspective. Boston, okay? Let's break down Boston. Well, what does Boston have to do? Conceivably, Boston would have to beat Toronto, okay? They'd have to beat Toronto, and they'd have to beat Tampa Bay, and then Pittsburgh, who they handled last year in four. And then they would play in the final, and you can't tell me they'd have physically beaten up and less travel in the East generally, too, as much as any other teams. I don't know. We talk about the Jets in respect of the Western Conference and how tough it is. Think about actually trying to win the Cup. It seems not impossible, obviously, because it isn't, but it's very, very difficult. Rapid fire on the other side of the break, our final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
I'm going to let Jungle Land breathe here for a second. You're listening to the final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Rangers at a homecoming. For Saturday, December 21st.
Bruce is such a poet.
You know, just let him go here. Richard Pollack joined.
Yeah, play the whole song, man.
By Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk. Michael Remitz now opping behind the scenes there. Tim Debenham did a bang-up job today. And Jesse the intern doing great work as well. Not only contributing to the Dustin Byfuglien conversation, but also contributing a post on the interview we did with the HBO producer, Dave Harmon, about 24/7. It's a final segment, so as Drew says, you know what that means.
Rapid fire.
We talked about Tom Wilson's hit on Braden Schenn on Wednesday's NHL Midweek show. Anticipated some form of a suspension, and the ruling came back. There was none at all. I'm asking why, because the NHL broke it down. Are you surprised that there was no games handed down for that hit, Ezzy?
Yep, absolutely. It was a dirty hit. It was a charge. And it resulted in Nicklas Grossman jumping Tom Wilson, because it was something that on the ice, when that happens, there has to be repercussions. And I think there's an inconsistency there. And I think that NHL Department of Player Safety has done a good job for the most part this season. And, you know, a hit like Derek Englund, I questioned that one a little bit, why that was a 5-game suspension, but there was an injury that resulted from that. But I think you absolutely have to suspend a guy for something like that. When he skates in from the blue line and hits a player who's unsuspecting, there has to be consistency there in your decision process and the disciplinary process. So I was surprised.
David?
Upon further reflection, when you watch that video, you can't understand how he doesn't get a hit at least a couple of games for that, because it was pretty clear that he beelined for him from fairly far away to make that hit, make that contact. So, I am with Ez. I'm surprised that they didn't give him some form of suspension.
I am too. I mean, how do I take the NHL discipline seriously? I'm sorry. When they're going to give Sean Thornton the 15 games, fine. I understand you're trying to police the game. And then you have a hit like that. An unsuspecting guy. My problem with it is this. The intent is not to play the puck at all. He's just charging him. If Braden Schenn breaks his neck, he gets 70 games.
Mm-hmm.
And Braden Schenn doesn't break his neck, he gets nothing. And the intent was still to ram him through the boards.
So the result is dictating what the penalty
which
is.
Which I don't think is the right.
Right. It's the intent that should be dictating.
That's exactly right. It ought to be a factor maybe in determining the final penalty. But the intent to me is the biggest issue. And he was not. The point is to play the puck and to separate the guy from the puck. I understand, okay, when a guy's coming up the middle, you're going to hit him. We talked about this on Wednesday. But just to absolutely blindly just run at him, and you're going to take a shot however you can, and Schenn sees him at the last second. Okay, he turned. The guy was coming with like 13 steps or whatever it may be. It's not the way the game is meant to be played. And to me, I can't take it seriously when they hand out these suspensions that they want me to take seriously, and then they hand out no games at all. Alexander Ovechkin, guys, he's certainly a guy who you can go on either side. He can go on either side in terms of whether or not he is. We know he's a great player, but is he a champion? And I personally, I'm of the opinion so far that he hasn't convinced me that he is. But you cannot take away from him the goal scoring ability. He scored his 400th goal last night. He did it in one game. He did it one game. He needed one game less. Excuse me. Than did Pavel Bure, the great Pavel Bure. And my question for you is, if you have one game and you need to win, Olympic gold medal, Stanley Cup final, you pick in Ovechkin, you pick in Bure?
Really good question. And it's amazing that at 27 years old, he already has 400 goals, isn't it? Still kind of seems like he's a couple of years removed from a rookie season. So Pavel Bure really set the tone for a lot of these players for a guy like Alexander Ovechkin. Remember when Pavel Bure first came into the league, everyone's seen that goal where he scored on a breakaway and kicked the puck from his skate, and even though I think that was in an exhibition game, but
that
just
was,
his dynamicism on the ice. And I'll take Alexander Ovechkin, even though Alexander Ovechkin yet hasn't won it at the NHL level. I think that Alexander Ovechkin has that game-breaking ability, and Alexander Ovechkin also is a player that if he needs to, he'll hit. He's a big guy, and he can do that. Pavel Bure didn't have that component of his game, so I'll take Ovechkin.
Bure wasn't as polarizing as Ovechkin is, but And I don't know if that's a credit to Ovechkin, maybe because we just knew he was a goal scorer buried from day one, but I'm wondering if now Ovechkin's just becoming that goal scorer, maybe the other player we thought he'd be in terms of all around like Crosby's become, was something that we misread the situation. Who would you take, Dave?
You know, I'd go with Bure. I mean, Bure, as much as, you know, Winnipeg Jets 1.0 fans will remember, as much, you know, he was such a Jets killer, and he had that speed, and he could break games open by himself. I mean, he played on good teams, but he was the catalyst for so many of those good Vancouver Canucks teams.
They both don't play any defense. I mean, Bure was sitting on the red line his whole career, and Ovechkin is as close to the red line as you can be the way he plays in the defensive zone.
Yeah.
And my biggest issue. But see, the thing about Bure, I mean, they went to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final.
Right.
But Bure was, I don't think he was ever perceived to be the guy like Ovechkin is.
But Ovechkin hasn't done anything as the guy. I mean, he's done a lot for individual accolades, but hockey's a team game. And the key for Ovechkin, the knock on Ovechkin for now and until he does something, is get his team past the first round. I mean, we're not even talking about
past the second round.
That's right.
Get his team somewhere.
That's right.
And get his team to the conference finals. I mean, of course, Sochi is going to be huge, and you anticipate that his whole career he's been thinking about this tournament. Mm-hmm. So he turns it up in that tournament. I'm not yet sure I'll be convinced that he's still that guy, but of course he's an amazing goal scorer and he's easily a Hall of Famer. Guys, next question. Florida Panthers have been raising some attention with their team tweets recently. Who do you think has the best NHL Twitter account? I'm talking to two Twitter experts here, Dave Minuch and Ezra Ginsberg.
Well, I'm going to have to. To me, it comes down to two teams, really. There really are two teams. Now, there's a lot of teams that have fun with it. There's some teams that take their Twitter seriously. Most of the teams actually follow us on a curve, so we have a chance to kind of go back and forth with them sometimes. Without question, the Panthers are good, and they've come on of late, but the LA Kings have the best team Twitter account by far. They have fun with it. They're funny. Sometimes they let the celebrities take it over, and then they do some tweeting throughout the games. But they don't take it extremely seriously, and they have a lot of fun. So I'm gonna have to go with the LA Kings.
There's two team Twitter accounts that follow me. The Jets follow me, and they only follow like 100 people. So look at me, I'm so important. And the Florida Panthers, and so I can't pick the Jets because I'll be viewed as a homer. So. Even though the Jets Twitter account, we know who runs it, and they do a good job. But the Florida Panthers, I think right now, have taken over. And, you know, they had some funny tweets during the Jets game yesterday. So I'm gonna go with the Panthers. I think lately the tweets have really been good, so I'll go with them.
Final question. Pavel Kubina, one of Remus's favorite players, retired this week. Together, please name every team that Pavel Kubina has ever played on. It's not as many as you may think.
Well, you told me not to.
Don't cheat. Let's go.
It was more.
Tampa Bay Lightning.
Okay, that's
Toronto one. Maple Leafs.
Started off in Toronto, two. Tampa, back. Sorry, Tampa, Toronto, back to Tampa.
That's right.
Philly. Atlanta.
There you go.
That's it,
see?
Oh, I thought it was more. I thought like Calgary's in there.
No Calgary. You just created that in your mind. I think before we get to cheers and jeers, we can now jeer you, Remus, for thinking that you played for more teams.
Fair enough.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Cheers and jeers, led off by Ezra Ginsberg.
I'm going to cheer Jaromir Jagr. He recently passed Stevie Yzerman for eighth all-time with his 693rd goal. He's only 7 goals away from 700, if I do the math correctly. What's most impressive about that goal, though, it's a game-winning goal. 122 game-winning goals for me is the really impressive stat. So the fact that he's doing this at his age, he's really leading the Devils offensively right now, and it's truly remarkable. Jagr, to me, is a top 10 forward of all time, and I think the fact that, again, that he is still able to perform at this level at his age is really good.
David?
I'm going to jeer the NHL for these overproduced outdoor games. There's too many of them. They've saturated the market, and it's hard to get inspired and really look forward to anything, considering there's just so many of the games that are being played.
Leave it to the NHL to ruin a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's clearly a money grab. But so I mean, and you can see that based on the prices. So that's my problem. They've taken something that I think has a uniqueness to it, and it's just a great feel. And whether it be the Heritage Classics or the or the Winter Classic, and they've overproduced it.
Am I supposed to care about that game when it's like, you know, they're playing in LA and Anaheim? I'll turn the game on. I'll watch like a regular game. It won't be as good because the quality is isn't as good. And then I'll turn it off and watch another game.
Right.
That's simple as that. My cheer today goes to Paul McClain for coming out actually saying something. A lot of coaches don't say something, and they're got the chains on from the organizations. But Paul McClain comes out and says, "Hey, our team needs to be better. Our leadership needs to be better." And I like when coaches are candid like that. And I realize that Paul McClain's probably said it in the room 100 times, and it's been an interesting evolution of leadership with Daniel Alfredson leaving, and then the Chris Phillips or Jason Spezza as captain. They chose Jason Spezza. I've always been a Spezza fan, and I'm hopeful he'll respond. They're up right now 3-2 against, I believe, the Phoenix Coyotes this afternoon. But I like that Paul McClain is honest and open and is able to, you know, express himself. Sometimes we don't get that all, you know, we don't get that, and we have to not take it for granted. Excuse me. That's it. That flew by. Always a pleasure to have David Manuk in studio. Jesse, the intern, doing a great job. Michael Remus doing a great job. Ezzie Ginsberg, the go-to guy for a Legal Curve Hockey Show, and Timmy Debenham was great music today. Always fun to host. Thank our guest, Mike Colligan of thehockeywriters.com and Forbes Sports Money. Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. Our sponsors, CGA Association of Manitoba, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and the Linden Market Dental Center. Of course, we can't forget the Chill Bar and Grill, where tonight Ezra Ginsberg will be hosting the Ezzies, the hashtag Ezzies. You can follow Ezzie on Twitter for more information about that, and I guess follow Illegal Curve. He'll be tweeting out information, retweeting.
Your mom actually texted me. She won last year. I told her she'll probably win again next year.
I don't even.
Pardon me, this year.
I don't even want to hear about that.
Why?
No show on Wednesday. Christmas, we're getting off. We'll be here back Saturday with our Olympic team predictions and breaking down the Jets' week that was. Three games this week. They should be interesting. Thanks very much for joining us, and have a good Saturday and happy holidays.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.